Hey everyone, it's Marvin. This episode of Books and Boba is brought to you by Home Interrupted, a new podcast from our partners at Feet in Two Worlds. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts. And Boba, a book club and podcast featuring works by Asian American and Asian authors. I'm one of your hosts, Marvin. You're joining me is
Rira Yu.
And this episode, we're going to be talking about How to Live Safely in a Science Fictional Universe, a novel by Charles Yu. If you've been following along our past couple episodes, you'll know that we spoil things. So if you haven't read the book yet, go ahead and read it. Come back. We'll be here when you're done and you want to unpack what you thought. You can also contribute to our discussions on our group page on goodreads.com, dedicated to our books.
Yeah, and you can always hit us up on social media.
Yep. Oh, well, before we get into the books, How's it going? It's our last podcast of
2016.
Books and Boba has been alive and kicking for 4 months now.
4 months, yeah.
Yeah. I haven't had this many books on my desk in a very long time.
Really?
So it's actually good. We're recording at Riva's apartment right now. And her bookshelves are full of books.
Yeah, mine's... there's like books hidden behind books because I don't have a big enough bookshelf. So,
yeah, my bookshelf at home is my grad school textbooks and a bunch of DVDs from my time in Sony. So very, very different. But it's good to have books. It's good to just read again.
Yeah,
I like reading. So,
and there were a lot of books by Asian and Asian American authors this year, and there's even more coming out in 2017. I was so shocked. So I'm really excited. And
yeah, our Google Doc of potential books,
it's growing.
Yeah, we have enough for the next like 10 years of Books and Boba.
Yeah,
so stick around.
Yeah, you guys should visit our Listopia on Goodreads and vote for which book we should read. We don't have a poll, but we take suggestions into serious consideration.
Yeah. And so, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast because we do have mid-month episodes every month where we go over book news, exciting news about new book deals, new releases, and, you know, hot topics like Harry Potter.
Hot topic?
Hot topics, not the...
Topics.
Not the clothing retailer. And I guess we should just do this at the top of the show, but if you do like what you hear, please leave us a rating and review on iTunes. It really does help us out, especially in these early months of the podcast. And for those, and if you have any friends who are interested, who tell you, if you have any friends who complain about not having Asian American authors to read, please, please give us a recommendation because they should know. People should know.
Yeah. We have a lot of books on our list. A lot. So...
All right. Let's get on to this month's book, How to Live Safely in a Science Fictional Universe, published by Vintage Contemporaries. The back cover reads, "Every day in Minor Universe 31, people get into time machines and try to change the past. That's where Charles Yu, time travel technician, steps in. He helps save people from themselves, literally. When he's not taking client calls, Yu visits his mother and searches for his father, who invented time travel, and then vanished. The key to locating his father may be found in a book. It's called How to Live Safely in a Science Fictional Universe. And somewhere inside it is information that will help him. It may even save his life." So already in the description of the book, it's self-referencing itself.
Yeah, it's metafiction. This is our first metafiction in our to-read pile.
Yeah. And yeah, the main character, the protagonist in the story is Charles Yu, the author.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting. So he's actually the brother of Kelvin Yu, who is an actor and writer on Master of None with Aziz Ansari, and also one of the head writers at Bob's Burgers.
Oh, Bob's Burgers. Yeah.
And I think currently Charles Yu can be found as a story editor on Westworld.
Westworld, yes. Yeah. Very big show.
But I guess, yeah, let's get to it. I'm going to let Rira take the lead because she's the book club captain here.
No. Okay, so, I mean, just like looking around my apartment right now, you can immediately tell that I am a big Doctor Who fan. And this book, a lot of the theories of time travel, it reminded me a lot of Doctor Who. It reminded me, like some of the humor reminded me of How to Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams. And I mean, there's like hints of it here and there. I thought this book was going to be a lot more lighthearted, like more there would be like more humor, more sass to it, but it was actually a very depressing book. It was really, really depressing. I was like, oh, like, wow, like he, like the protagonist, his relationship with his father, I was like, wow, this is some dark, complicated stuff. Not what I was expecting.
Yeah, you look at it, you look at the description. I agree. I did think that it was going to be something similar to Hitchhiker's Guide, where it's more of a tongue-in-cheek, like, fantastical satire of pop culture. And it turns out it does have all those trappings. Like, in the Hitchhiker Guide vein, it explains its own, the mechanics of its world in a very, like, matter-of-fact way.
Yeah, I mean, there's, like, in between chapters, you get, like, one pages of the manual. So it's, like, half manual to survive in the science fictional universe and how time travel works, and then like half like biography, autobiography from the protagonist's perspective. Yeah. So it was like, oh, that's interesting.
I actually thought, like, I did agree that it was more heavier than I thought it would be. And even in the world building, it sets up that the people of this universe, this minor universe that they take place in, which is some sort of time collapsed Los Angeles, Tokyo, New York hybrid world.
Yeah.
People there suffer from chronic self-esteem issues. And and even in the Hitchhiker Guide vein, there is a depressed, not depressed robot, but like a depressed AI.
Like a self-deprecating AI. Yeah. Yeah.
Multiple. Like, yeah. There's the boss AI who thinks he's real and makes terrible jokes.
Oh, yeah. Like Phil, the dad. The dog, dad bot. Yeah.
Sub dog.
With Minor Universe 31, it is self-described as slightly damaged and incomplete. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. Like, you kind of get the feeling that everybody who lives on Minor Universe 31, they're all kind of misfits and failures, like failures in their life. I mean, the reason why I thought that this book was kind of a depressing read is, like one of the main themes in the book, it's failure. It's how do you, cope with regret, and how do you move forward knowing that you're going to make these terrible mistakes in your life. Like, I think there's a line in the book where Charles Yu, the protagonist, he says, like, oh, like, moving forward is like your future self coming to you and telling you like how you're going to disappoint yourself for like the rest of your life. And I was like, wow, that is so, like, so dark, but
right.
It's so candid.
I think so. There's so many, because it's metafiction, there's so many different things that we can talk about. We can talk about like the meta-ness of the narrative, or just a narrative in itself. So the basic story is there's three acts, right? Mm-hmm. And it's separated into three modules within the book. The first act is Charles Yu as he is in the beginning of the story, just kind of avoiding life. right? Yeah. Trapped in, like, he pretty much sets his time machine that he uses to go provide tech support to other time travelers. And this is something I really liked, is the use of tense, like grammar.
To describe
time travel.
Yeah, like the setting that he has his time machine on is present indefinite.
And I had to look it up because I'm not a writer. So I was like, what does that mean?
Yeah, I thought it was very interesting on like the time travel theory of like, oh, like your mind is how you time travel.
Right.
And like the way we use language, that's how we time travel. And I was like, oh, like in a sense, like this book is kind of like a time capsule for the character. So I thought that was interesting. And
So he's in the present indefinite, which is, it's a state where he's just being, but not really affecting.
Yeah, anything, he's right? He's definitely, as protagonists go in the first act, he is the most passive protagonist you will ever meet. He doesn't do anything. He is like the way that his time machine works is that time passes inside of his machine,
right?
But time outside, it moves in a different speed,
which is like relativity. That's,
yeah. So it's like
if you're super into sci-fi
and time travel fiction. But it's like he spent like what, like a decade in his time machine, mm-hmm. and just like his life kind of passed by inside this machine without him doing anything to affect the universe that he's a part of.
Yeah. And then the rest of the world, like a day has passed.
Yeah, like a day has passed. Yeah. Classic Doctor Who.
Or Interstellar, they did that too.
you'll learn over time that like time travel books, they share a lot of theories together.
There's so many different theories too. And what I really liked about this book was that they also define different types of time travel.
Yeah, like the multi-parallel universes,
and also the fact that when this is something that comes up in Act Two, but when you recall memory, that's essentially your time traveling.
Yeah.
Right. And then there was this really cool interstitial talking about the time travel recreation device. There's actually a hyphen in it. Mm-hmm. It's the recreation device because whenever you're pulling up a memory, you're not really remembering it. You're recreating it.
Yeah.
And every time you recreate it, like, there's that theory. Like, every time every time you recall a memory, it becomes less and less accurate.
Yeah, less and less accurate. Yeah, like you see an example of that in a scene where he's rescuing this woman who, who recalls a memory of her grandmother dying, mm-hmm. but she wasn't there and she's trying to save her. And it's like, well, this isn't real. This is just in your memory of like what would have happened if you were there.
And if you stay here, you can tear a hole through.
Well, if you stay there, then like you have essentially not just time traveled, but you've jumped into a different universe. Universes have mashed together and you kind of live this ghost existence.
Yeah.
It's a trippy book. Very, very trippy book. Very complicated theories. Yeah. If you're new to the sci-fi game. But I guess we can... I mean, amongst like all of the time travel theories and like the the cool science fictional stuff that's happening and the robots, the crux of the novel, which kind of happens at the halfway point
at the end of Act One, I think. At the end of Act One is he's forced to make a maintenance check on his time machine because it's like way past due.
Yeah.
Right. So he literally just wants to be there as little time as possible. So on his way back to his machine after it's been checked out, he encounters himself.
Mm-hmm. And he shoots himself because that is like, I don't know if that was like a thing in his actual like professional manual or if that was just a thing that he came up himself.
So there was that piece of the manual saying if you encounter yourself, you're supposed to run away.
Run away, yeah. Yeah.
You like, because the moment that happens, like a time loop is created. And then I didn't really get the motivations behind shooting his future self, except that he was panicked.
Yeah, I think it was like more of like he had a gun in his hand and he panicked and he decided to, instead of like fleeing the scene, he decided to fight and shot himself. And of course, you know, time loop theory, like you can't change anything.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're pretty much jumping universes again.
Yeah. And, so he shoots himself and then jumps into his time machine, breaks his leg in the process.
Yeah.
And then flies off. And from that point on, we enter the second act where we're pretty much running through the loop, like hurtling towards that moment now that has been, that he has set in motion.
Yeah, well, in the beginning of the second act, he gets the book, How to Live Safely in a Science Fictional Universe.
Yeah.
And he is instructed to transcribe this book word for word. And it's, and I thought that was like a little bit weird because it, because it's like this theory of like, okay, well, he wrote this book, but he also received this book from his future self. So how did the book come to existence in the first place?
And his future self tells him like the key is in the book.
Yeah, right? Quite literally, the key is in the book.
Which comes into play later. But
yeah.
And yeah, so the second act is him trying to figure out what's going on. Right?
Yeah.
And then as he's transcribing the book onto the Toad, which is, there's a lot of really cool acronyms.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's the Hitchhiker guidance of it, just making up cool machines.
Yeah.
He decides he wants to skip ahead, as we all do, right?
Yeah.
Like, when we're reading complicated narratives, where we're invested in the character.
Yeah.
In this case,
it's actually, him. The really funny thing is, whenever like I pick up a new book, like one of the, like when I'm like shopping for new books, a trick that I have is like, okay, I read like maybe like the first couple pages and then I go to the back and I read the last sentence. And like, and I guess like in this book, like there are pages that are left intentionally blank. And I was just like, God damn it. Why?
In this book, the last page, the last sentence is literally page left intentionally blank.
And it's just like, it's being clever. And I don't know if I like it.
Well, when Charles tries to skip to the end, he creates a time paradox or...
Yeah, like isn't that when he goes through, like... Is it when he goes through his memories or is that when he goes to that space?
He goes through a retcon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Childhood memories, I think, starts in the third act.
Third act, yeah.
The second act is he goes through, like, this... Not even, like, an alternate dimension. It's kind of like the place where time doesn't exist. Like, he goes into like this temple,
right,
where time has no meaning.
Yeah, it's like a weird vacuum
in
space. And then he like meets his like alternate version of his mother.
He meets like his ideal mother who he does not like.
Yeah.
Like it freaks him out. And then he finds out that his dad's been there too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And throughout the story, there's flashbacks about him and his father, him as a child. Like his father is, I guess, a struggling scientist engineer who wants to make it big, but keeps running into problems.
Yeah.
And I really want to touch about this after we finish summarizing the story, but
we need to break it down a little bit because this book, like it kind of defies format and like narrative arc. Like it's kind of framed around this time loop because you go around in a circle.
And it's very much like, I typically don't enjoy reading stream of consciousness.
Yeah.
This one, like, I know you had some problems with it, but I felt like I was like, I appreciated it in this context.
In the context.
But okay. So he pretty much escapes from this timeless temple and then is taken to like this time shuttle or this time bus.
Yeah. Some kind of vehicle that like kind of picks him up from this time vacuum. Yeah. And it's like an alternate version of himself. Right.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look like him.
It's more confident.
Yeah.
Like, it's supposed to, like, I think he described it as the ideal version of him. Or the most aware version of him.
Yeah.
Right.
Because he's met, like, other versions of himself, and they're all pretty much jackasses.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, like, this is, like, the best version of him.
And then I guess, yeah, the buzz is the retcon engine. So, like, they go on, like, the retcon his stories to bring him back into existence.
Yeah.
While also bringing back his dog. Yeah. And that was kind of... I love the dog. So, Charles, in the story, has a dog named Ed, who is a dog that doesn't exist because they got retconned out of the story or something.
Yeah.
Like, the action-adventure story that he belonged to. And I'd like to think that it's Ein from Cowboy Bebop.
Oh, my
Bebop.
God. I had the same exact thought. I was like, oh, Ed, Cowboy Bebop. I mean, like I, yeah. I got that feeling a lot, like, reading the books. I was like, oh, it's, like, referencing so many, like, geek things that I know. But, like, I know that it's intentional because, yeah. Like, there's no way that the author wrote this thing. In.
Speaking of references, I also really appreciate all, like, the Asian American references in this story.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Something that I want to talk, like, that's what I want to talk more about after. After we summer, let's
get through the second act and the third act.
So the second act ends when he gets brought back into his ship,
yeah.
His time machine, and decides to, somehow he ends up in his childhood.
Yeah, he ends up in his childhood. I read this book quite a long time ago, so I don't remember, like, how that happened. Like, did he decide to go back in time to, like, try and find out how to get out of the time loop, or, like, was there a hint about his dad?
Yeah, so the bus driver version of him kind of gives him a lecture on how he should essentially just be a better person, have more confidence in himself, like, have more self-esteem, self-value,
mm-hmm.
how he should treat his mom better, how he should treat his his computer better. And
yeah, like, he kind of treats those two characters like garbage.
Yeah.
And like that was the thing. I mean, I'm gonna like probably touch up on this later, but like like the book before How to Live Safe, like the book from last month,
mm-hmm.
was Monstrous by Marjorie Liu, and there were so many women in that book. And like just reading Charles Yu's novel, I was just like, I know, I get it. Like, the character is a male protagonist and he's kind of like a recluse and he doesn't really socialize that much. And he just kind of seems very passive. But I was like, where are all the women in this book? Like, you find out that even Tammy, his computer system, his software system, she's like a version of himself that's like project. So it's like essentially like she's not really like a female character.
Yeah.
And then like his mom is just a mom, not really much of like I really wanted more scenes with his mom because I thought like the situation that he put her in, like on this like retirement plan of her being in a time loop for the next like 10 years.
Yeah.
And just like her reliving 60 minutes of a hypothetical dinner that like never happened. I was like, oh, that's super interesting, but I don't really get that much context of his mom, whereas like I get so much information about his dad.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seemed a little like I was kind of upset. I was like, where are all the women? And like it's just Tammy, his mom, and then like one sex bot. And I was like, okay, I get it, but at the same time, like, it's just like a personal,
I guess, like, it's, you know, at its core, this is a story about him and his relationship with his dad.
Yeah.
And yeah, even the female characters are given less time to shine, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I think about, like, if this book was adapted into a film,
mm-hmm.
like, that made me even, like, a little bit more frustrated because I was like, oh, if this was on screen, I would even be angrier because it's like, where, like...
I mean, they probably get like Scarlett Johansson to play.
Oh my God, Tammy, no, her. She played her.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
sorry, that was like was like a little mini rant, but that was like one issue I had with it.
No, it's valid.
It's valid, yeah. But.
And so the third act, he decides to. Oh, he gets back to his time machine and basically starts reliving his childhood.
Yeah.
And so the third act is him going through his memories, trying to, I guess, figure out his father. right? Or
I don't know if it's figuring out his father. I think he does that along the way, but I think like his purpose of like going through these memories is to find out like that one moment where everything went wrong with his life. Like, it's just is there like one crucial moment where I can like get out of this time loop? Where right. it's like, oh, if my dad had just succeeded with showing his time machine, like with that demonstration, if he succeeded, then maybe it wouldn't have been like this.
So you go through all like the critical moments that he feels he had with his father,
mm-hmm.
Starting with him confronting his father about, is the family being poor? To him helping his father with his research, to him helping his father pitch a machine that ultimately failed to like the big corporate director guy.
Yeah.
And all the while you see his own stream of consciousness, like things he wished he could have said but didn't, or things that he said that he wished he didn't, and he mm-hmm. didn't know why. And there's a lot of, you know, it's stream of consciousness. So you see like all like the thought process of,
yeah.
Like, I know this will make him angry, but I can't stop.
Yeah.
Which is a very teen feeling to have.
Yeah. I mean, like, the whole story about his family and his relationship with his dad, it's very much like an Asian American immigrant story.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, oh, like, you want, like, your parents are doing everything for you to, like, have opportunities and... And, like, I don't know, like, you, there's, like, this gap between you and, like, your parents' generation.
Well, there's that, and also the fact that what's missing in a lot of immigrant stories is that your parents had dreams, too.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and they either didn't pan out because you happened, or didn't pan out because they're in this country, or they're in this new place that didn't allow them to succeed the way they might have.
I thought, like, with Minor Universe 31, I thought that was, like, interesting because it seemed kind of like a metaphor for kind of like the immigrant experience, where you're in this place where you don't really fully grasp the grammar of things. You don't understand the language, and you always feel kind of out of sync. And, like...
Yeah.
You kind of see that with, like, his father. He's always kind of, like...
5 minutes behind.
5 minutes behind, and he's always going 5 minutes back just to, like, relive or, like, trying to, like, figure out how to move forward with his experiments. And,
yeah. And so he sees all... He travels through all his memories, and then through this, like, recap of his life, he comes to the realization that he's always been... passive.
Yeah.
And then his mom gave him a package before he left, right? So
like, he had just, like, you know, stopped in when like the time loop had kind of like paused for a second, and she's just like, why did you put me in here? Why did you put me in here? Do you really think that I'm happy? And like, it's like, you don't come anymore, you don't call anymore. And I'm just like, wow, that is like so relatable, because you know, like, as you get older and you kind of drift away from your parents, it's like they have, like, they carry all this junk that you like had in your childhood, and there's always like, I don't know, that guilt of just like, oh, like, I should really spend more time with my parents. And like, I understand that, like,
and that's, I think that's doubly affecting for like us, because of even like the East Asian values of filial piety and how you're supposed to take care of your parents. And I think that whole scene, to me, I was thinking about just the clash between, you know, like Eastern and Western ideas of how you grow up.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Whereas in Chinese culture, you're supposed to take care of your parents.
Yeah.
Look after them. Whereas in Western culture, it feels like it's more, you need to take care of yourself. Once you're an adult, you're like, you have your own domain,
mm-hmm.
and your parents are now free to do whatever they want. And there's this clash, right? Where being raised in both cultures, you feel like, well, I deserve to have my own time, but I got to take care of you. So I'm going to stick you in this retirement home with other old people that you can make friends with. mm-hmm. and you'll be fine, right? And then it's definitely especially for Asian Americans, a very relatable conflict.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't have the exact quote on me, but it was when he was describing the silence in his family's home. Like, they would all kind of, like, schedule their appearances in the house, like, exactly. So they would just kind of, like, miss each other. And even when they were in the same room, there was, like, this vacuum where, like, it's just, like, the silence, and they don't really communicate, and like they like purposely do this, and it's just like, oh well, I mean, we've seen that kind of happen in books that we've previously read in this book club, like especially Everything I Never Told You, where like people hold back what they say, and they don't really they're not really candid to their family members, and they only show like one side because that they think that's what they want to see. And that's pretty much what happens to his mom, right? Like, his mom tells him, like, oh, it's okay to put me in this time loop. I'll be fine, when clearly you see in that scene where she's, like, giving him the box that she's not okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought it was also really interesting that she picked, like, the one moment that she decided to relive. It's not even a real moment. It's a hypothetical dinner where everybody's kind of like this idealized versions of themselves.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I kind of wish I got more of the mom. I'm probably never gonna let that go, so I apologize, but
it doesn't help that the mom's not part of the time loop, but she's is a yeah. I mean, even when he's reliving his going through his memories, it's mostly his dad. I mean, whenever his mom was around, it was about them fighting.
Yeah.
Right? Or her leaving for a while.
Yeah. I mean...
Yeah.
I think he, like, mentions that, like his mom and, like, his mother and father, like, they love each other, but at the same time, like, circumstances, like, their financial situation, it causes a lot of problems in the house.
And, yeah, that is a recurring thing. It was just, our family's poor, dad's struggling, mom's struggling, like, and then, well, dad's also a dreamer.
Yeah.
And I think him realizing that his father was someone with his own ambitions, I feel like that was what triggers his own. There's a point, so... the memories lead up to the point where his dad scores a meeting with
the corporate
director. Yeah. And it's like, he even says that he foreshadows, like, this, the best moment of their lives, the apex. Everything after this is downhill.
Yeah, I have the I have the quote down. He said, "Sure, we are here. This man came to see us, but in the grand scheme of things, we are minor. We are, but for one possible exception, failures."
Yeah.
So it's just like...
And that whole exchange, that whole section, like those 5 to 6 pages, was a heartbreaking roller coaster of, like... Because you see his, you know, it's stream of consciousness. So you see his thoughts from, we can do this, to, oh no, we're frauds, to, no, we deserve this, to, he sees right through us.
Yeah.
And you get the feeling that, like, during this whole time, I kind of, like, the word privilege came up in my head a lot. The fact that Charles and his dad goes through all this, have to, like, kind of convince themselves that they're worth it.
Yeah.
While someone else, it's not even crossing their minds.
Right? Yeah, they're like, because, like, what happens is that, like, you know, like, Charles and his dad, they failed. But another family that's, like, only a couple of miles away from where they live, they had the same theory but different execution. Mm-hmm. Only their execution worked.
Yeah.
And you don't really get to hear that, like, that family's side of things. But I just got the feeling that that family was a little bit more, like, financially well off. And maybe, like,
yeah,
it wasn't like they weren't like putting all of their bids in. Like they didn't they weren't like riding on this thing to work. Whereas like with Charles and his father, it was very clear that like this experiment has to work in order for their lives to actually improve, and otherwise they're just stuck.
Yeah.
I also thought that it was kind of heartbreaking that like his dad, he has this belief that hard work will always be victorious. Like as long as you put in the hours and do the work, you'll succeed. But Charles, the protagonist, he knows that like that is not the case. And I thought that was a very like very much like the American dream, you know, of like you can succeed no matter where you are starting from if you like work hard enough. But I thought that was like pretty heartbreaking to read.
Yeah. And then afterwards he realizes that he spent all the time of going through his memories searching for that moment. And then realized that when he shot himself in the stomach, he had already told him what he was supposed to do.
Yeah.
Right. I think. And then Tammy, like, sarcastically reminds him that you're, like, the book is the key.
Yeah.
Right. So that's when he finds the key in page 201, which they draw in a little envelope inside the book. I actually tried to flip it up to see if it was real. Oh, my God. And then he finds the key, and then the dog, Ed, points at the box. So he opens the box, which contains the time traveler survival kit that he wanted as a kid.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And then inside, there's a lock. And then he opens it up. He sees a diorama of his family's kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And is able to piece together the exact date, time, and year
his dad will be in, right?
The message that his dad sent through this package that he got.
Mm-hmm.
That his mom gave to him. And so the moment he realizes that, he's on his way back to the hangar.
Yeah, because he has run out of time. He's caught up with his time loop. And he says he has three choices when he finally catches up with his time loop. One is that he just follows whatever happened,
mm-hmm.
and just kind of like don't make any decisions. Just like let his time loop dictate what he's supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second option was to say, fuck this time loop. I'm just going to run away and not get shot in the stomach, which would cause his timeline to be messed up and just physics to get freaking weird. But yeah. And then the third option,
create a universe and kind of mess things up.
And then the third choice is to decide to go get shot. So it's like it's predestined, but he still gives himself agency. He's like, oh, I'm going to go face my fear. I'm going to this is my decision to go and be a protagonist pretty much.
Yeah.
Not let things happen to me, but rather like I choose to let the things that I want to happen.
Right. And that is his narrative arc coming to that climax, right?
Where
and then there's that moment. So the entire like penultimate chapter is him stepping out of the time machine and kind of having his life flash through his eyes and seeing basically who he was before the time loop started and who he was after,
mm-hmm.
and the differences. And that's pretty much the differences. He was a guy who just was okay with being passive, okay with letting life pass him by.
Yeah.
And then contrast with who he is now, who is someone who like has agency,
mm-hmm.
right? Who wants to take charge of his destiny, I guess.
Yeah, it does seem like that. Like he is like taking control of his destiny in that decision.
And then everything plays out like it did.
Yeah.
Like he tries to lower the gun. He tells his younger self
that the key is in the book.
And then he gets shot in the stomach.
Yeah. And then he finds out that getting shot in the stomach doesn't mean that you die. Like, it hurts like hell, but you can still live. And yeah. It's kind of implied that he, after he, like, survives this, he's going to go look for his dad.
Yeah. Well, he says that it hurt a lot and he never felt better.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, there's the appendix in the book.
There's the appendix.
And...
which is all, like, the possible futures he has now.
Yeah, all the possible futures. And he's told kind of, like, his future, like, his past self, like, hey, you're going to go find your dad. But then after you find him and you guys, like, talk, you need to let him go. You, like, cannot let your dad's failures and let, like, his mistakes, like, control your life anymore. You can't blame your father for like, how much of a... potato you have become. He was a potato. He became a potato.
He upgrades to Tim instead of Tammy.
Yeah.
And then he goes and finds Marie, which is this made-up girl that he might have married.
Yeah.
And that's the book. And then the last page is Left Intentionally Blank.
Yeah.
So I know you started off a little bit colder on the book. Like, how did you feel after finishing it?
I mean, I felt better. I think when I told you that I wasn't enjoying the book, it was like before the second act had started. And let me tell you, that second act comes in way later than it should. I was just like, man, like, I'm on like page 100. This is halfway into the book. This should happen in page like 45. Like, what the hell?
I felt the same way, that like the book didn't really start catching me until that second act.
Yeah,
because the first, I don't know if that was intentional or not, because
I'm pretty sure it was intentional.
The first act was just him being like a potato, like you said. Yeah. And I really enjoyed, I think, being Chinese American, and it's implied that his parents are from Taiwan.
Like, yeah, they mentioned the author is Taiwanese American.
Yeah. Like, from an island where there's a home language, a official national language, and English that they had to learn when they immigrated. And I think having that, like, this, that same background, or at least similar background, it really, like, the whole temple scene, like, I can visualize everything there. Mm-hmm. From the way that his, you know, his ideal mom holds incense, like, that's how we hold incense in temples, like, with the index finger and middle finger together, you know, to like the little pit that you stick it in, and, you know, the smells and the descriptions. And I thought, even though it wasn't like totally called out, it was a reference that had more meaning to me, or it was a reference that I can catch, that exists. And I thought that was super cool.
Yeah, I mean, this is a sci-fi book, and in that sci-fi there's some really real candid stuff going on. And to me, like, I mean, I love sci-fi. Sci-fi is like one of my favorite genres, and it's probably the genre that I read the most. And
which is good, because you're going to have this book is a lot better if you have even a basic grasp of time travel.
Yeah, I've read a lot of time travel books in my day, but the parts that I like the most in this book was like those little moments where, like, you see his mom and his dad, and like you see parts of his childhood timeline.
Yeah.
And
because, like, it is an immigrant story.
Yeah, it is an immigrant story. Like,
yeah. Seeing through the eyes of the second generation.
Yeah.
Right. And yeah, it's, it did bum me out. Like, there's entire paragraphs where it's just a dude being depressed.
Well, yeah, like I said at the beginning of this podcast, like, one of the main themes in this book is failure and dealing with failure, and how, like, memory and regrets, like, influence your decision making process. And
yeah, there's, you know, even as a tech, he observes that, like, yeah, time travel is supposed to be fun. You go back and see, you know, Hamilton making speeches on the constitutional floor, or going to see important events. But people mainly use it to go revisit the worst days of their lives.
Yeah, because time travel, I mean, that whole genre exists because it's about regret. People time travel to fix their mistakes to prevent. And even like time travel movies and books where it takes place in the future, it's usually like the future self goes back into the past to fix, like, to prevent the future that they're from from happening.
To kill Sarah Connor so that the robots win.
Yeah. So it's like, like, that is the whole genre. So, like, I understand, like, why it's a depressing book. I was like, oh, time travel, it's going to be depressing, but hey.
The meta part of it is, you know, there's parallels. Like, and the fact that it uses tense and grammar in order to power its time travel, it's, you know, you look at people who are stuck in the past, people who can't get over things they did or things that happened to them. And I think that's kind of that. I think that's the central theme of this book as well, is to have agency in your own life and not to dwell to, like, let go of the past, because that's just gonna keep you, like, that's what keeps people down.
Yeah, like, you can't obsess over the details.
Yeah.
Otherwise, like, you're going to, like. The whole point of like the mind theory of time traveling is like, oh, you're a time machine is not really like a machine that takes you into the past. It's your mind that takes you into. So it's like your brain is kind of like switching to your past self, like rather than like your entire body being transported through time.
Yeah.
And I mean, when that happens, when you recall a memory from the past, you don't have any memory of the present. And that's how time travel works. Like, you think about the past, you forget what's happening in the present. You miss out what's happening in the present. And because you don't remember anything that happened in the present, you don't know what's going to happen in the future. And therefore, there's this vicious cycle of you're stuck and you're not going to be able to move forward with your life. Yeah.
And that's pretty much what the book is about, is how to, or one guy's journey to get past that.
Yeah. It's about how to live safely in a science fictional universe. Don't fucking mess with time travel. Live chronologically. It gets a little bit too complicated. But yeah, like, I guess, I mean, we broke it down. I'm curious to hear what you personally thought of the book. I think I've ranted quite a bit in this episode.
So maybe it's, you know, I don't have my female character's radar turned on to, as high as yours. So while I did wish that there was more of the mom, I didn't really get, like, the... Maybe it's just the way I read. Like, I'm not as aware. No, it's interesting to hear your take on that aspect, because you know, that's something that an author should keep in mind when they're writing stuff. Is,
I mean, it's just like the funny thing is, like, I noticed it, but because I've been reading sci-fi for a very long time, sci-fi has been kind of like this boys' club, and I was just like, well, it's sci-fi, so I'm gonna be like a little bit. I was just like, okay, I'm gonna be lenient with it. I'm not gonna like turn. Like, I'm not gonna be like woke as fuck, like, for that, but at the book club meeting, Dan was the one who brought it up. He was like, I'm really upset that there aren't like the women characters are not as fleshed out as the men in this in this book. And I'm just like, wow, like, I let that slide, and I didn't really get angry about it until you mentioned it.
I think there's definitely opportunity for the mom to be a little bit more fleshed out. But I think personally, because I recognize it as a father-son story.
Yeah, a father-son story.
And he was definitely a daddy's boy. Like, and this is going through his memory. So, I mean, not excusing it, but I can see why his mom would be less fleshed out, because he obviously doesn't...
Well, it wasn't just, like, the fact that, like, his mom wasn't fleshed out. I think, like... One of the main problems I had with like women representation in this book is just that everyone is defined by like a relationship to a male character.
Uh-huh.
And it's just like, well, like even like the imaginary girl that he doesn't marry, she's not even like that much of a character. It's just like this like fantasy that like the that the protagonist has. And it's just like, okay, well, like, all I wanted was one. Like,
yeah.
One, but like I can't.
Well, I mean, the other female-ish characters were like computer programs and a robot.
Yeah, but they were also like kind of like taking orders from the protagonist and kind of like molded to his wishes, you know? So, I mean, it's kind of like a pet peeve of mine, so it's not like a deal breaker. That's not the reason why like I gave this book like a good rating rather than like a great rating.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the book itself, the first half, I don't think I was as down on it as you were in terms of how slow it was going. I recognized it was going slow, but I also was intrigued by because the first, it's kind of like a anime series, let's say, right?
Okay.
The first few episodes is like episodic and it's like non sequiturs and setting up the character. And then halfway through that first season, the main story arc begins. Right. So I kind of saw it as that.
Yeah. But then like in the, okay, like taking Cowboy Bebop, because we mentioned Cowboy Bebop, like it's an episodic show and like the main arc of the story doesn't even happen until like way past the halfway point in the series. Like with that series, it's like I'm a little bit more like open to it because.
I mean, I guess I think I might have just found the, you know, the service calls and the description of the home base a little bit more interesting than you probably did. But again, I don't read as much, so maybe if I read more sci-fi, it'd be more like more of the same.
I think like my main the main reason why I couldn't get into the book as much. I mean, like I picked it up and I kind of like it was very slow in the first half, but in the second half it just kind of flew by. Like the prose, it's very much in the character's head. It's like very inner monologue, and that's just like a personal taste. Like I really don't like that type of prose, and like I get it, it's important for this book. It makes sense for the story and the character. But it doesn't mean that I have to like it.
Yeah, I mean, there were literally pages where it was just one paragraph.
It was just like, like, I would just like be reading. And it's like, okay, it's like consciousness. And then like, bam, something like really poignant and like super blunt about life. And I'm just like, okay, like.
I kind of like that, though. I kind of, I think, once it got into that second act where I was invested in the stakes, I think I got used to the prose, it definitely, like, the second half flew by a lot faster than the first half. I agree with you there. But overall I liked it.
I liked it. I didn't love it, but I'm entitled to my own personal opinion.
I liked it a lot. I mean, it's different than what we read before. So
yeah, and it's also it's very much genre bending.
Yeah.
Like this book was praised for like its clever way of like breaking like the fourth wall, kind of. Like, I mean, it's metafiction and it's supposed to do that, but it's even new in metafiction.
Well, we're supposed to accept that we are reading the book that is inside the story.
Yeah, inside the story, yeah.
Yeah.
So.
And there's a point in the book where, and like, kind of, it blew my mind a little bit when I realized it, but there's a couple moments in the book where, like, where you are in the book and where the characters are in the book, like, match up.
Yeah.
Right. And that's like, whoa.
Yeah, it's a very clever book. but yeah, like. Yeah. That was our discussion on How to Live Safely in a Science Fictional Universe.
What did you think about the book? What do you think about Rira's points, my points? Please let us know. On our Goodreads forum, there is a thread going right now for How to Live Safely in a Science Fictional Universe. So please let us know what you think.
Yeah.
And yeah, that does it for this month's book. Next month, January, we have some extra time, but we're going to be reading
Something in Between by Melissa de la Cruz. And this book came out in October, I think. So it's
We're reading a new book this time.
Yeah, it's like fairly new. So And also, it's kind of, I mean, the book is a YA contemporary on a Filipino-American teen girl who is kind of like an overachiever in academics. And she finds out that her entire family and herself, they're illegal immigrants, meaning that all hopes of scholarships and going to college, it's kind of like dashed. So I thought it would be really interesting to read because January, inauguration of our new president.
He shall not be named. American Voldemort.
American Voldemort. Orange Voldemort. So I thought that would be like a very like topical.
I'm really interested because I have a couple friends who actually have been through that situation. So it'd be interesting to
see. I definitely don't know much about it. About like the struggles of being undocumented. So I'm really interested in reading it, and the author is also Filipino American, so that's
qualifies for a book club.
Yeah, qualifies for our book club.
So you can get that book on Kindle. It's available hardcover only right now on Amazon. It's actually on sale right now. Or you can wait for Reaver to finish reading it and go to the local library.
Yeah, go to your libraries, you guys. It's free.
And that's it for this month's Books and Boba. Please subscribe to our podcast wherever you find it. And yeah.
Keep reading, you guys.
Talk to you soon.
This episode of Books and Boba was hosted by Marvin Yue and Rira Yu and produced and edited by Marvin Yue. For further discussion on the books covered at Books and Boba, please visit our Goodreads forum. You can find the link on our Facebook page at Books and Boba, as well as by searching for the group Books and Boba on Goodreads.com. Books and Boba is also a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a brand new collective of Asian American podcasts and podcasters. You can learn more about the collective as well as check out our founding slate of programs by visiting the website www.podcastpotluck.com.
Potluck.